Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're going to explore a topic that's pervasive in our society, but often misunderstood, as per usual with this podcast, and that topic is dieting. But before I dive into dieting, I wanted to give you all a few updates coming to the podcast. First, I am about to wrap up the first season of the podcast, which means I will be taking much more time off than usual. So the podcast will be fully back after the summer. Why so long, you ask? Well, for one, if you've been listening so far, you know that I am currently finishing up my last year of grad school. So not only am I working as your favorite podcast host, editor, producer, and social media manager on top of my day job, but I will be working on nutrition research for the next 8 months. And based on the feedback you've given me over on our Instagram page, I'll be working very tirelessly over the summer, bringing you way more guests on topics such as eating disorders, addiction, more specific topics on mental health, mindfulness, meditation, alternative therapies, sex, physical health, more nutrition, and just so much more. Now let's get into our topic for today. I've been wanting to talk about this for a while now, and I haven't, just because this topic is something that bleeds into many other fun subjects, like our society as a whole, disordered eating, and whatnot. So I will try my absolute best to keep this episode as clear as possible. Today, I wanted to bring up dieting and its long history, why dieting isn't for everyone, what a healthy diet or eating pattern consists of based on science, and why it's so important, and habits you can incorporate today to improve your life now and in the future. So what is dieting? The clinical definition of dieting, according to the American Psychological Association, is the deliberate restriction of the types or amounts of food one eats, usually in an effort to lose weight or improve one's health. Now, when you think of dieting, the first thing that comes to mind is usually weight loss, because that tends to be the most common reason why someone seeks out a certain type of diet in the first place. Dieting as a concept is not new. However, the term gained notoriety in America based on its very unique and obscure history. So today, you're all getting a history lesson in dieting. Now, dieting in America really started in the late 1800s, where a man named William Banting was seeking medical help for his obesity. Now, when a doctor named William Harvey told him to restrict foods high in carbs, he lost nearly 50 pounds and claimed that this style of eating saved his life. Thus, the Banting diet became really famous. Fast forward to the early 1900s, the mastication diet made its claim to fame by proclaiming you could lose weight by chewing your food into a pulp. It became so popular that people would create parties for the sole purpose of having a really long, drawn-out dinner together where they were chewing their food for a really long time, and it was even recommended by doctors during that time. Then came the use of advertising on influencing weight loss and dieting. There is a brand called Lucky Strike Cigarettes, which posted ads of women smoking and claiming that it would help you lose weight and stop your urge to overeat. Although it wasn't an actual diet, people did follow it like it was one. So it wasn't until many years later, back in 2011, when we discovered that tobacco companies like Lucky Strike did in fact add appetite suppressants to their cigarettes, such as amphetamines and nitrous oxide, which is used commonly in laughing gas. Then we get into the 1920s and 30s, where the grapefruit diet and banana and skim milk diet became popular. These diets are exactly what they sound like. People would eat grapefruits at every single meal, and then some would only eat bananas and skim milk only for their meals. In the 70s, diets really became famous. Some of you might have heard of, such as the Slim Fast diet, which you can still buy Slim Fast shakes to this day. There was the sugar diet, where you would eat a spoonful of sugar before meals to curb your appetite. The 80s saw the Jenny Craig movement and the Optifast diet, which was another shake diet, very famously promoted by Oprah, which she now claims was one of her biggest mistakes. Then in the 90s, we saw the emergence of the Atkins diet, the Zone diet, the blood type diet, to today, where the most frequently discussed are the keto diet, Whole 30, veganism, paleo, and intermittent fasting. So as you can tell, dieting goes back many, many years ago, and that's just the history of fad diets. Now, it's important to mention that during the Middle Ages, fasting was seen as a way to purify the body, which the term anorexia mirabilis really stemmed from. It was also seen as a way to become pure and embrace your morality. Then come the colonial times, where dieting and the ideal to stay thin was documented to justify racism and harmful patriarchal standards that are still seen today. So that's the SparkNotes version of the origins of dieting in the US. Now, with such a long history of fad diets and dieting in general, how are we supposed to know what a healthy diet is? Well, I'm so glad you asked. Let me tell you. First of all, I want to acknowledge that one version of eating does not necessarily work for everyone. That's because every human body is different. Someone's version of a healthy diet or style of eating, I like to say, might be best for them because they're eating to help with their cancer or heart disease or mental health. Someone's style of eating might be helping them cope with recovering from an eating disorder. Someone's style of healthy eating might be for an injury that they have. Another person's style of eating might be that they're just working on eating more vegetables. The point being that a quote-unquote healthy diet is one that works best for you, not what worked best for that influencer you saw who's making $100,000 a post selling you a supplement. Now, what is a healthy diet? You all know I get a lot of information from the WHO, and this episode is no different. The World Health Organization defines a healthy diet as a healthy eating pattern that protects against malnutrition, non-communicable diseases, and is made up of diversified and balanced factors that depend on the individual. First of all, I just said something that most people might not know. Non-communicable diseases are those such as heart disease, diabetes, stroke, and cancer. And then I also just listed diversified and balanced factors. What are those factors? Well, a healthy diet can depend on and be influenced by your age, gender, your lifestyle, physical activity, geography, or any cultural customs, just to name a few. The WHO and the American Heart Society classify a healthy diet as one that's made up of fruits, vegetables, legumes, which are just lentils and beans, nuts and seeds, whole grains, and if you're someone who consumes animal products, low-fat dairy and lean cuts of meat. They encourage you to eat low amounts of highly processed foods, excess sugar, trans fats, and any excess alcohol. But what does science say? So I found a couple studies that talked about certain diet patterns and how they influence health and disease. These tend to be the most popular, which is why I'm discussing them here. So just bear with me as I go through just a couple of very important healthy diet patterns that science has seen the most of. So a large and growing body of evidence does support the intake of certain types of nutrients, specific food groups, or just overall dietary patterns positively influence health and promote the prevention of those non-communicable diseases, which I mentioned earlier. Those are the stroke, the heart disease, and cancer. Greater consumption of health-promoting foods and limiting your intake of unhealthier options tend to be more natural or more common to the eating habits of certain regional diets, such as the Mediterranean diet, or diets that have been constructed as part of something to reduce disease risk, such as the dietary approaches to stop hypertension diet. You'll know that as the DASH diet. or there's also the Mediterranean DASH intervention for neurodegenerative delay. That's also the MIND diet. So in comparison with a more traditional Western diet, like the standard American diet, the acronym for that is the SAD, SAD diet. We'll leave the irony there. These healthier alternative diet patterns are healthier in plant-based foods, including fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grains, legumes, seeds, nuts, and lower in animal-based foods, particularly fatty and processed meat. So according to one of the research articles I found, and as always, I will link it in the episode description, they describe a healthy diet similarly to how the WHO and the American Heart Association describe it. So in this one study, they describe a healthy diet as one where macronutrients are consumed in appropriate portions to support your energy and your physiologic needs, while also providing enough micronutrients and hydration to meet your basic physiological needs of your body. So those macronutrients would be your carbs, your proteins, and your fat, and those provide the energy necessary for all of the cellular processes happening in our body required for us to just function daily. The micronutrients, like vitamins and minerals, you need smaller amounts of just for normal growth, development, metabolism, and just basic physiological functioning. So let's talk about the Mediterranean diet, because that one gets talked about, especially right now, more. So the Mediterranean diet is based on components of the traditional diet patterns of Euro-Mediterranean countries, and it encompasses not only the foods consumed, but also an approach to eating that's mindful of how those foods are sourced, like the sustainability and eco-friendliness of those foods, how they're cooked, how they're eaten, as well as any lifestyle considerations like engaging in regular physical activity, getting enough sleep, and prioritizing relationships with others when preparing and sharing meals. Within the core framework of the Mediterranean diet, variations based on geography and culture are reflected in the emphasis of the inclusion of traditional and local foods. So the health benefits of the Mediterranean diet were first described back in 1975 by a person named Ansel Keys, who observed a reduction in cardiovascular disease risk among people whose nutritional model was very consistent with practices of people from the Mediterranean basin. Now, since that time, research has revealed many beneficial effects of the Mediterranean diet on a number of non-communicable diseases and related health measures, which include cardiovascular and cerebrovascular disease, cancer, glycemic control, and just overall cognitive function. Then there's the DASH diet, which derives its name from the Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension study, which evaluated the influence of diet patterns on blood pressure. Now, patients who consumed a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, low-fat dairy, which included a reduced amount of saturated and total fat and cholesterol, experienced much greater reductions in their blood pressure than patients who consumed a diet that was similar to the American diet. Now, the diet pattern that came from the DASH study emphasized eating a variety of vegetables, fruits, fat-free or low-fat dairy products, whole grains, and just various protein sources like seafood, lean meats, eggs, legumes, nuts, seeds, and soy. They limited the consumption of sugars, saturated fat, sodium, and alcohol, which was suggested in this study. I think you can already start seeing a pattern already. And then there's the MIND diet, which combines elements of both the Mediterranean and the DASH diet with the goal of sustaining some type of cognitive health throughout older age. Now, both the Mediterranean and DASH diets have been individually linked to positive cognitive outcomes, including the prevention of cognitive decline or impairment and better cognitive performance. So some studies have reported associations between the MIND diet with a 53% lowered risk for developing Alzheimer's disease. Now, these same studies found that those who were following the MIND diet were associated with cognitive function equivalent to being 7.5 years younger. The MIND diet focuses on increasing the intake of fresh fruits and vegetables and emphasizes brain-healthy foods like green leafy vegetables, nuts, berries, beans, whole grains, fish, poultry, olive oil, wine in moderation with limited amounts of red meat, butter, cheese, pastries, sweets, and fried or fast food. Now, although there is substantial evidence supporting the Mediterranean and other European-based diets, traditional regional diet patterns from other parts of the world that follow similar principles have less well-established links to positive health outcomes. However, that doesn't mean that they're not there. Like I mentioned earlier, geographic location plays a huge part in what a healthy diet can consist of. Because of that being a major influence, I'm going to get into some traditional Asian diet patterns that have a similar effect that the diets I just mentioned do. So first off, we have the traditional Korean diet, which is composed of rice and other whole grains, fermented food, indigenous land and sea vegetables, and their proteins are primarily from legumes and fish as opposed to red meat. They have medicinal herbs like garlic, green onion, and ginger. They use sesame and perilla oils. And their meals typically consist of multiple small portion dishes, which are derived from seasonal food sources, and they're also cooked at home. Now, unlike the Western diet, the traditional Korean diet does not include many fried foods. And some data does suggest a reduced risk of metabolic syndrome, obesity, hypertension, and hyperlipidemia among individuals who follow a traditional Korean diet pattern. Now, similar to the Korean diet, the traditional Japanese diet, known as the Washoku, is characterized by small portions of multiple components, primarily including rice, fish, which is often eaten raw, soups, and pickles. They include fermented soybean paste, which you'll know as dashi, and it serves as the base of many of the soups that are central to the traditional Japanese diet. Other ingredients include seaweed, fruits and vegetables, and mushrooms. Now, following a traditional Japanese dietary pattern has also been associated with favorable effects on blood pressure among healthy Japanese adults. Now, after all those styles of eating I've mentioned and their health outcomes associated with it, I didn't mention why it's so important to have a healthy diet pattern. Now, sure, science can speak for itself, but most of you listening are not like me and looking through hundreds of research articles every week. Food and your relationship to it is arguably one of the most important factors to living a well-lived and long life. A healthy diet can help prevent disease, some of which I already mentioned. In the US specifically, the top leading causes of death are related to chronic disease, which comes from having an unhealthy lifestyle. An unhealthy lifestyle can look like someone who is smoking, has poor nutrition, lack of exercise, and excessive alcohol use are some of the top causes of chronic disease, including heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. If you listened to my nutritional psychiatry episode, you would know that food choices greatly affect your mental health, and multiple studies report that a diet rich in vitamins and minerals is associated with a lowered risk for mental health disorders, including anxiety, depression, and ADHD, to name a few. Now, over time, when you make healthy decisions about food, you are at a lower risk for cardiovascular disease, certain cancers, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and even anxiety and depression. You'll have more energy, you'll feel better, and you may even be in a better mood on a daily basis. So in another study, which I'll also be linking in the show's description, found that a healthy diet decreased the risk of early death from any cause by 56%. And that number is huge. Now, while the science I just reviewed here suggests that certain diet patterns positively influence health and disease risk and outcomes, It's really important for me to mention that there are additional factors when combined with healthy eating patterns that creates a lifestyle that promotes health. For example, in addition to the healthy diet patterns, a healthy lifestyle is one that incorporates regular exercise, healthy relationships, getting enough sleep. I cannot stress that enough. That will be another episode. And minimizing those that have negative effects on your health, like tobacco use, excessive alcohol consumption, physical inactivity, large amounts of screen time, and chronic stress. Okay, so now we're here and you're thinking, okay, Savannah, you made it clear that diets don't matter, but establishing healthy eating patterns do. So what do I do now? Well, let me tell you. Generally, not following a diet and listening to your body is really hard, let's be honest. Especially in our social climate today, where there are a ton of conflicting information on social media about dieting and nutrition as a whole. If your goal is to stop dieting, and what I mean by stop dieting as in following the fad diets that aren't working for you, and you want to create a lifestyle that is healthier for you and develop a style of eating that works best for you, then start with these steps. Step one, make a plan. This is simpler than you think, but you want a plan that is actionable. So for example, when you wake up tomorrow, instead of going out and grabbing that breakfast sandwich from the fast food place you always go to before work, and I'm really telling myself this, wake up an extra 30 minutes earlier and make your breakfast at home before you leave. That's something that you can do that is actionable. Step two, save your money and eat at home. If you are a chronic takeout food person who eats out 3 meals a day, 7 days a week, plan to have one meal that's cooked at home. More likely than not, that home-cooked meal is going to be more nutritious than what you're picking up, and you can eat whatever's left over the next day. Step three, make small goals when it comes to creating a new eating pattern. If your goal is to eat more fruits and vegetables a day, think of easy ways you can do that at home. Is it adding a vegetable to your dinner plate? Is it adding a snack during your lunch break when you're working from home? That's an apple and peanut butter, or maybe a handful of carrots. Or maybe you decide to swap out one meal during your week with a plant-based one instead. Small goals are more attainable and are more likely to stick and form long-term habits. Step four, write down what you eat and how it makes you feel. I've recommended this before to people I've coached, and I have to preface this one with there is a difference between writing down what you eat and how it makes you feel versus tracking what you eat. I do not recommend tracking macros or calories for anyone unless there is a very specific reason for it. For example, you might be an elite athlete that needs to be at a specific weight for your sport, or maybe you have a medical condition or some type of medical reason that needs you to track what you eat. Now, this is a habit that anyone can do at home. You're gonna write down everything you ate for breakfast and how that meal made you feel. That's not writing down a quarter cup of oatmeal, one slice of an apple. I'm not talking about writing down that. I'm talking about writing down a bowl of oatmeal, an orange, 3 cups coffee. And then after, write about how it made you feel. Did you not like the taste of your oatmeal? Maybe just don't eat your oatmeal anymore. Try something different. Maybe those 3 cups of coffee made you feel way too jittery after drinking them. Maybe cut back on your coffee or switch it out for something else. This is a great way to help you understand the why of choosing those foods that you're eating. Now, this is a bonus step. If you're somebody who has kids or you want kids or you're just in an environment where there are young people or young children around you. But step five, which is optional, is be a model. And I don't mean model as in walking down a catwalk type of model. I mean model the behaviors you want your children to practice now and when they get older. Do you have a kid that absolutely hates broccoli every other week or only wants chicken nuggets and macaroni and cheese? Take it from me, as someone who has taught nutrition classes to children, how you model your behavior around what you're eating can hugely impact children. Getting your kids involved in food shopping or physically helping you make meals, sitting down together at mealtimes, giving your kids a variety of snacks to try, or maybe they watch you try new fruits and vegetables to snack on, can create really healthy eating patterns at a young age that will benefit them as they grow into adults, because they'll understand what's important when it comes to their own food choices. It also helps kids reduce their risk in developing a chronic disease later in life, which is proven by a ton of research. Now, those are the steps to creating a healthy eating pattern today that everyone can do. So what have we talked about today? We went over what dieting is, the history of dieting in the US, what science says a healthy diet or eating pattern is, and steps to create a healthy diet pattern that works best for you. Notice how I didn't say one of the steps is to go out and buy as many fruits and vegetables as you can. Although I hope that you do go out and try foods that are going to help you live a longer and healthier life, I do want to recognize that there are some people who do not live in areas where that is an easy luxury. The steps I mentioned are ones that can be done anywhere, no matter where you are or what your socioeconomic status might be. The hope is that you listened and got this far in the episode, and of course, learned something new that can help decrease the stigma related to this topic. As always, thank you for listening. But before you go, if you haven't already left a review on your favorite listening platform, do so now. Not only does this help the podcast grow and reach more people, but it also helps me get more amazing guests that can contribute their expertise in areas you want to hear about. You can also subscribe to the podcast so that way you are notified when a new episode drops, and follow the podcast over on Instagram where I post more content related to each episode. That's all for today, and we'll see you here next time.